You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
Oh, Dwayne, you went quiet there for a minute.
Oh, sorry.
It's Dwayne.
Hello.
There we go. It's Niall.
Ring. Hello.
And it's me, Brian. Tonight's episode. Oh, Dwayne didn't paste it in.
A little story from the past. Bitch. My name is Doppio.
That's it. Rightio, yes. That is episode 26 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Golden Wind, in which we're introduced to Doppio, another member of La Passion. Who's been sent to Sardinia. But it turns out he's actually the boss, or at least he shares the boss's body.
It's a pretty good ruse for a guy who's so obsessed with keeping his identity secret. Like, you can find the guy, but you're not going to actually be able to see it unless he's exposed to a very certain degree of psychological pressure.
Yes. And it's all, like, heart-told. It does a really good job of, like, making you feel sympathetic. For somebody who is quite clearly the bad guy of the thing, because this isn't actually the personality that is the bad guy. And throughout the episode, this personality is being manipulated by the other personality.
Mm.
It's a weird thing. And I knew the secret, but I did not know they just basically reveal the secret straight away with the.
Yeah, it's more so watching it creepily play out.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, it is that Nicalis immersed herself in the really fucking strange dichotomy with kind of relationship, I suppose you want to call it, that they have going on here. And just sort of, I'll go say by disturbing ways that it manifests itself.
Yeah, and it, obviously the thing you have to bear in mind, because it's quite, because I've seen other people think this on Twitter and other people have commented on it, is like, there's the temptation to think that, oh, it's poor innocent Doppio, and he's somehow got this evil alternate personality.
But, oh, that he's being controlled from outside,
but
kind of thing.
It, that can't be the case, because Doppio is too young to be the original. We know how old, if it was Doppio, because I don't think he was age of 17.
Well, so, I mean, like, his fucking birth doesn't make sense.
He would be two years old when, Trish was born. So it has to be like a double that the boss has created or has somehow come to have.
I'm going to have to go for a minute because I'm house sitting for a friend of mine and we just got a fucking silent alarm. So if I come back dead, you'll know I'm gone.
Oh gosh. Assassination team.
I'll be a little bit. So sorry.
Righty ho.
Okay. We'll do what you want without you.
We will have to.
Sorry. Back in a sec.
No problem. Of all the weird things, if I wasn't here, you'd have to be doing it on your own, Niall.
Like, I'm just afraid, like, after talking about creepy murderers, that I'm going to get fucking killed. So we'll see in a sec. All right.
Okay.
My other identity will just manifest itself and we'll just be chatting away with each other. Here he is right now. Hi, it's me.
Fingers crossed, dear listener.
Vile Flanagan. How's it going, boys and ghouls? I don't know why it's Halloween based. It rhymes up, baby.
So we meet him as he tries to save a child who's chasing, trying to catch a beetle. That feels a bit like imprinting Japanese cultural behaviour into Italian cultural behaviour. A kid being super obsessed with catching a beetle.
I don't think I have big beetles in Italy. I've never been.
No, I don't know. But yeah, obviously, it feels like a very, this is a thing that kids in Japan will relate to when they read it in the comic. He tries to save it, and the kid goes, yeah, I knew there was a vehicle kind of.
Stupid.
And he ends up getting his suitcase destroyed. Run by over. It's like a lorry or a van or something.
It gets run over in traffic. And then he gets a gossip of, and then, you there, boy, a fortune teller calls out to him. I see you have a sorrow about you. Let me tell your fortune.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it turns out that,
he's right on the money.
Yeah, he's a little too good at fortune telling.
I see you, two personalities inside you, the light and the dark, we're bonded together in one body.
He's like, yeah, this hand is a lifeline which is much older than your body appears to be. And this is where we start to get the eye twitching and the muscle bulging that kind of goes, oh, yeah, okay, something's not right here.
Like, he goes off on a whole thing in the comic. The author, the narrator, I Iraqi, does about, like, there have been cases a bit of like, multiple personalities, like, syndrome where, when they go to another personality, there have been, like, actual physical changes in that to them where they do seem to, like, appear a bit taller or a bit other face, the way their face looks changes and something like that. But it takes to an extreme because Stop, you're a very slight fella with, like, a very thin build. Us hulks out and has this guy pinned against the wall, like caught by the throat. I suppose you can just, like, write, kind of, wave that away a little bit, but no, Stan did it. Stans have done it.
And, yes, he takes care of this, fortune teller with King Crimson. And you're like, okay, that right. Mm. That kind of, gives the game away if you hadn't figured it out already.
Yeah. But no, you just look at his hand. But, oh, this hand, yes, yes, wait a minute, this hand is a different hand. And then, oh, it's my left hand. How about that? Ah! Yeah, gory, creepy, it's good.
Then we're back to Iraqi giving you tourist warnings about visiting Italy. Obviously, it's been a while since the first episode of... But yeah, we're back to somebody running a taxi scam again. This time it's being run on Doppio. And as he's taking the taxi... Is it that when we see Risotto is also here?
He gets like out of the taxi and like, you know, if he's trying to like, the guy's just asking him and say, hey, you gotta pay this fare, buddy. I think you've had an extra zero on there. I don't think you can cost much to get this from here out of the city. You know, like, oh, well, you gotta pay a kid or I'll muss you up. Like, do I muss me up? I'll fuck you up. And then, brrrring, what's that? What the fuck? He's making a noise with his mouth. You told me you didn't have a carafone in here. Give me that carafone. He pulls out a little kind of dangly, like, little key ring or fun thing he has hanging in the rearview mirror. It's like, son, hello. Yes, boss, it's me, Doppio. I'm on the scene. And then his other personality, the boss, is talking to him, like, in his head, but I wonder if he put on the voice as well with his own mouth. It's getting quite disturbing. He does that multiple times in the episode where he picks up stuff, like, well, still a thing hanging from the rear for a second, but then like a frog. I was like, who knows to be a payphone outside here? Grabs the frog and then some fine, hello, yes, it's me.
Yeah, that's after Risotto's appeared and he's trying to get this envelope off him.
Yeah, he's thinking, oh, well, I'm lying here in wait to see who would turn up, but it's just you. But something not about you, like, you know, you seem like an average guy, but, you know, and you're scared the shit out of me. I threw that knife at you. But you instinctively sort of, like, try to hide an envelope. What you got in there? Something you want to see, yeah? Like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. No, it's nothing in there? And you kind of, the envelope kind of flies out, and it's oh, there's maybe some papers in here. I guess you've got nothing to worry about. You're just some average guy. But he pulls away, you can see that Doppio has, effectively, again, he's kind of, got the photograph of the house he's trying to find, the one in Sardinia that Trish was born and raised in. It's just kind of like hidden, stuck to the bottom of his shoe. And the boss warned him as well that like, okay, like, this guy's got a stand power. You gotta get within like 2 to 3 meters of it for it to have an effect. So be careful of that. This guy Rosato, he's got an ability that can exceed that range. So watch out.
Yeah, and so Risotto's about to let him go again, but then he notices that Doppio can hear a certain sound. And he's like, ah, you can hear that sound. That's the sound of the stabbed Aerosmith being used to scout the island by Narancia. So you yes. must also be a stand user.
It's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about, Mr.
But Doffio seems to not know that he's stand using because he has to be reminded at the end when he gets that second phone call off the frog.
That, yes.
Don't you remember, Doffio? I have lent you some of my power.
Yeah. And while Doffio is Doffio slash the boss slash the two of them at once is getting equally kind of terrified and then angry at Rosado, suddenly he starts possibly spontaneously, like, vomiting up razor blades out of his mouth.
Yes.
It's like, oh, that happened.
So the final thing is him being reminded on the frog phone that you can use part of King Crimson. And so, next episode will be King Crimson versus Metallica.
Metallica. Yeah. And you can probably surmise, you know, with the razor blades just kind of start coming out of his throat and then, like nails just like erupting out of his face.
Doffio's
face that, you probably have a guess what Metallica's stand power might be. Have like an educated guess as to what it could be. Yeah. It is an interesting, little sort of arc here, which doesn't involve any of our heroes, say. And it kind of reminded me of bits, in Diamond Unbreakable, where he was kind of following Kira around for the day and seeing what he's getting up to, whether it's out any input from any of the hero characters. Like, we see, like, Aerosmith, but, you know, we don't see Narancia or anything like that, you know, doing anything to relate to it, so. So it is just the thing where it is, like, engendering again, maybe not entirely kind of sympathy, but you get an affection for the villain characters.
Or at least this personality of the villain.
Because
it's the weird thing, yeah, I think I'll say it's the weird thing that you feel sympathy for Doppio because he's being manipulated by the other personality, the one we know is the actual villain.
Mm.
And the one behind everything. And then he obviously has the added thing of, oh, hey, here's Rosato, here's another villain who is also opposed to the boss, but is also an enemy of our heroes as well. And, you get the standoff doesn't actually, as you say, it doesn't involve anybody, we've been familiar with so far.
Yeah. I guess we know sort of what King Crimson's ability is, so we're kind of like on his side to see how he is going to defeat Rosato's Stan Metallica yes. then.
Yeah, I guess that would be the position we're in.
Yeah.
We know Doppio's a good boy. He tries to save that kid. We're not operating under instruction from mysterious phones.
Well, he tried to save that kid, but then, you know, he sort of more so was concerned with the well-being of the little beetle when that same child, like, stumbles upon the scene of him bloodily murdering the fortune teller in the alleyway.
Yeah, but he doesn't kill the kid, though, does he? He just uses King Crimson to clean everything up.
Mm.
And so the kid's just traumatized with something he thought he saw, but has no evidence that he saw it.
Oh, yeah, he'll just be, like, shocked into a psychologically induced state of muteness for the next, like, 10 to 15 years. He isn't going to tell anybody who the boss is. He's pretty safe there.
Righty-ho, blimey, I'm tired, so I better get through this podcast quick, because I'm struggling. Ah, I might have to blow my nose shortly. Righty-ho, that is this week's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure taken care of. But what else did we watch this week? It's time for the podcast within a podcast. Let's go. And we're starting with Dororo, the story of the blank face Buddha.
Hmm.
In which there is a Buddha in search of a face.
The sculptor, anyway. It's trying to offer him a face, because it's one of those things where the creationist has taken on a life of its own and demands tribute.
Yes, but the thing then did bring the its creator back from the dead in order to find it a face.
Mm.
Which is a little weird. This is an adaptation of a chapter from the comic again. most of the elements are there. It's just the method and the explanation are different. I prefer the one in the comic because in the comic, the sculptor is basically getting ascetics to meditate under the waterfall, and then the statue cuts their faces off while they're meditating.
I see. So they just couple, whereas there would actually be a whole ruse in here where the sculptor has gained shape-shifting abilities and can kind of take on the appearance of somebody close to the victim and then lure them or usually just kind of drug them and then like drag them like bound head and foot to the waterfall to get had their face lopped off.
The shape changing still in the comic as well, and the stuff with Dororo seeing the sculptor as his mother. But also the comic has a scientific explanation as to what's happening. Because this is Tezuka.
Again, the split personality thing where they can take on other physical characteristics.
Oh, no, not even, that not, doesn't explain that bit. But it turns out there was no sculpture there at all. It was, moss had grown over the rock where the sculpture was to be, and the moss, although the mold, it was mold, not moss, mold. Had then been possessed by a spirit, so it was haunted mold was what was doing it.
Yes.
The scientific reason was haunted mold.
That's correct, yes.
That's not scientific, Tezuka.
But what if there's enough mold there and, you know, it kind of formed from the colony and gained some manner of sentience? And it being this kind of big massive mold, it would want some kind of like thing to distinguish itself, i.e. a face. Ergo, yeah.
That's science fiction. That's still not science fact. Hmm. Also, I'm not murdered, so that's great.
He's a doctor. I'm sure he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I just prefer a little bit more in the comic that the people were like willingly putting themselves in the waterfall rather than having to be dragged and held there while the swords took their faces off. But I quite like the mechanics of the statue in the animation version of like the rotating sword, and then it starts to move it outside of that rotation when it's actually trying to fight Hayakibaru, but it's still moving very stiffly with like very limited articulation.
Yeah, it's more sort of imposing rather than kind of this sort of mobile threat, like because you have to come to it or be brought to it. You can't really do anything else besides. It does have a good line in Creepy Faces, though, as it kind of morphs between different sort of half-formed, like, eyes and mouths and lips and things. Those are pretty good.
But you can tell it's quite slight, because they have, like, a massive post-story section of them in the Hot Springs to establish that Dororo's got some strange sort of map or marking or tattoo or branding or supernatural symbols.
Wait, where does he have those?
On his back.
On the back, yeah.
It's a map to the last bit of dry land in the world. Or the map to get you out of Fox River prison.
Yes, I don't know where that's going. What the deal is there?
Yeah, I don't know. But buried treasure, like no one hidden a tattoo of a map in the back, and we've gotten entirely the wrong anime here, the wrong comic.
Yeah, I suppose it could be an excuse
to Nakomi come back.
Bring back the guy who betrayed them. Like, he may recognize it and go know what its meaning is, if it is just a tattoo.
What, you think the boss of the gang tattooed his kid with buried treasure?
They're bandits. It's the sort of thing they did.
I guess.
Yeah, I can't remember if this is out of the comic or not.
Mm.
I know there's like I know bits of the bath scene were of like Dororo being very excited and then remembering that they're keeping a secret about their body, and then suddenly getting very coy and like telling Hayakibaru not to look. But obviously in this one, just to tell him not to look and also then say, oh, you can't see anyway. But don't look at it either. And I like the monk scaring them in the baths. And then blowing off. And I don't know whether those three characters who suddenly show up at the end are going to be something in the next story. Or whether they were just there for somebody to spot that there was something on the, on Doro's back, because the other two people weren't going to spot it, were they?
No. Yeah.
There's some low key things that are about Pyeki Maro trying to process the outright rejection by his family. Which seems to kind of confiding more and kind of relating more to Doro then, was like, you know, well, my family have turned me away, so you're sort of the fat only family I have now. So, So like, no, he may not say much, he may not like, kind of give it all away, but he is kind of mulling things over in his own mind, in his own way. And he's just,
Also, yeah, because Doro's worried at the end that he's going to be mad that Doro tricked him into going to these hot springs, but, because he basically was saying, oh, there's a monster at the hot springs, we should go to the hot springs, because there's a monster there.
He's cool with it. Yeah.
Righty-ho, next on the list is One Punch Man Season 2, Episode 1. This was called... What was it called? This is a new thing.
Return of the Hero?
The hell did it go to? Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. Return of the Hero. That's it.
Egg, egg. Yes. Looks like when I watched it originally, it did not have a title. Right.
Yeah.
Return of the Hero. So, yes, new director, new production company. And you can kind of tell, and apparently on the next episode you can really tell...
Okay.
The first 5 minutes, I was like, ooh. It was like meeting my expectations, which were very low, and then it exceeded my expectations later.
Yeah.
But by the sounds of things, this next episode 2 is going to probably be the last I'll be watching for a while. Yeah. We'll see.
That being said, though, the quality of the actual material, like, does shine through in the story and so on like that, but,
Yeah.
So, like, it is enjoyable to watch, if you haven't maybe kind of read a comic of One Punch Man, or even if you have, and just want to see it kind of acted out a bit. I think what carries this is just, seeing King, the quote-unquote strongest man in the world, just go off on one.
It's fun to watch him flail. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I had to go. I was like, I either had forgotten what Saitama sounded like, or the guy playing him has forgotten what Saitama sounds like.
I think it's probably that. Yeah,
it didn't quite sound right, or it may just be that there's a different. They're using a different studio, and the recording and the directing of the. Voice performance.
Yeah.
You're smoking a pack of 10 a day.
That could be it as well. Also, I felt like, I'd have to go back, but I felt like the comic, it came across like a little bit more sympathetic towards King's situation.
It almost seems like Saitama's, not so much sympathy or empathy or forgiveness or whatever. It seems to come from nowhere here. It's like, oh, I guess Saitama's just super sound out. Whereas, yeah, I think this is really playing up like King's patheticness, but not so much why you should forgive him.
Yeah.
I feel like he got a lot more like railroaded into this line of work. Whereas I feel a little bit more here that he's sort of happened once, so I'm going to go along with it and, you know, and live up and take all the accolades. Whereas, like, I feel like. I did go back and look again, I suppose, like in the comic, I feel like, Nord, just like so many guys come to me, oh my gosh, you saved our lives, you have to come and help us now and do this thing. And like, but as the thing is,
but I can't.
Oh God, if I say something now, I'll crush your tiny little hearts. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's like the comedy of, it's the, like the balance of embarrassment and politeness. It's like, it's the kind of thing that, Detroit Metal City minds. It's like, he doesn't want to be doing it, but he'd be letting people down if he didn't do it.
Yeah. It's like, it would be in stark comparison to, we'll say, that other one, comic with Reagan, who just is an absolute charlatan, and he completely just like this leans into it, but similarly gets away with it in spite of himself.
Yeah, whereas, because we never get the feeling that King's actually getting anything out of this at all, because he still lives in the same sort of poxy little
terror
apartment that Saitama.
Oh, yeah. He's not benefiting from whatever merchandising fucking deal he's on. He doesn't seem to be getting a cut of that. Maybe that all, oh, and of course King wants it to go to charity because he's a great hero. It's like, no, but I'm, okay, I guess.
We get the sense of like his character of being ashamed and keeping things secret of like, he's bought this, Renai love game to play and pretends like, oh, well, this wasn't the game I meant to pick up.
I feel like, you know, it's kind of like let the kind of charade progress to like a far enough stage that when he says, oh, that leave me alone, I'm in the middle of a terrible battle here, he says, like, home playing a new video game, they believe him, but, oh, okay, well, leave you alone, King, obviously you're off somewhere else saving the world. And similarly, like, monsters will meet him in the street, and it's like, oh shit, King, sorry sir, I'll get out of your way, I'll leave town, we'll come back over again, see that you do.
And yeah, obviously the joke is it's partly because of his voice and his face, and
yeah, he's got a tough guy face, a tough guy scars, yeah. But I like the way it's like he's a little tall, but people keep seeing that as like he's physically imposing. It's like, no, he's a kind of a skinny dude, really.
Yeah, but listen to that, Dwayne. His King engine is revving up.
Like, he just must have a very sonorous chest or something, yeah.
Yeah,
anything's worked in his disfavor.
His guts are just like, he's about to shit himself because he's kind of bubbling up inside him.
That's true as well, yeah. It's probably a combination of things freaking out about him.
Mm. I was struggling to remember which things we'd seen in the last episode as well and which were new in this one, but I think it's just because I knew everything which was coming next.
Right, yeah.
Was Blizzard in this episode?
It was at the very end there.
Yeah.
And our kind of main bit as well is there's a meeting at Hero Association HQ, and they're kind of gathering all of these criminals in. Said, okay, we need you guys to get in line, because we've got this horrible prophecy coming out of like terrible disaster going to befall humanity. I mean, you guys to fucking like fall in line with us to try and combat it. It's like, fuck you, man. Fuck you, Duvend. They're all kind of raising their stink about this. But primarily it's because we have one particular guy who we will see more of in the next episode, is Garo, the human monster, or soon-to-be human monster.
Yeah, I like that character a lot, but I mean, the comic exists in two different forms, and I feel they're both better than this version of this story, so I think I'm probably going to stick with the comic. Also, I'm having trouble remembering which things are in the episode and which are in the comic. Any sort of recap, I feel like I'll be accidentally gonna give away what's happening in the next episode.
I might stick with it a bit longer. I'm just kind of curious as to if they can bring it back, but not a strong
What I saw on Twitter is there's a fight, which is just a whole bunch of, which is basically a slideshow in episode two.
God, really? I kind of want to see that out of fucking morbid curiosity.
Oh, yeah, watch it for morbid curiosity, that's for sure. But, because there's a big fight in this is Genos versus some sort of robot.
Robot King.
And so I went back and watched, episode two of the first season of him fighting Armored Gorilla. And then you really see the difference.
One of the problems I was having with the direction of this is not only are they cutting between the fight and the comedy bits with King, which I feel like are taking from the fight, but they're also like cutting at the punches that kind of way. It was really bugging me. I was like, you've got to show the hit.
There's no follow through.
That's how you feel it. Yes.
And
yeah, exactly.
You kind of feel like, oh, this is how they're going to try and get through this for, I'd say, a lot of the series. Until they had, because look, there are going to be certain scenes in this where they can't, would not be to put on, they're going to have to buckle down and put something up there to see. So, I'm still kind of holding out a little bit of hope and anticipation that there will be kind of certain bits there that we've got to pull the finger out and really make a good show of. However, would not expect a sort of end to end level of kind of good to often really great, you got One Punch Man season two. But yeah, as I said, if you haven't read the comic for whatever reason, you can't, like, if you can't access it or this is the only way you can see it, then it'll be fine. Because I think the quality of the actual material will shine through.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of this episode was thanks to your man Doon King. Like, he did a great job of just being a real coward. It was pretty good.
Mm.
But, yeah, if performance alone, if you're there for the looks as well, you're really not going to get it with this, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think I might, like, dip in and out at occasional points. This is probably a pretty cool encounter. I might just have a look and see how they rendered that.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, still the comic's going to be the best-looking version of this. To be fair, I kind of think it was before, but, I mean, like, it was a freaking close call sometimes.
Yeah, well, frequently, like, the comic can often surpass what they can achieve, even in, like, with, like, Madhouse and Shingo Natsumi, like, and all the fucking good Team Red doing it as well. People always cite the speed of sound, Sonic, you know, dodging between the trees and how, like, that's laid out in the comic, this, like, the storyboards. If you kind of flip through it quickly, it moves.
Yeah, also the comic, because it's a web comic in both forms, it can do ridiculous things, like, in another form would be wasting pages of doing ridiculous zoom ins. And
man, that fucking zoom for the what was that base, big alien guy?
Yeah,
I fucking love that zoom in printed form. I love that owning that and just going to, yes, this is beautiful.
I was thinking of a bit of recently, but it was like just a giant centipede monster, and it gets punched in the face. But it goes on for page after page of seeing like all the different segments just kind of explode. It's like, imagine if like there was like in the middle of the comic, there's like a flip out thing, like some kind of like Playboy magazine folding, but it kept on going and going.
dear. Yeah, the comic's going to be like the best version of this, pretty much. It's just unfortunate that this one isn't going to make it a close call. That's the only problem, I guess.
Yeah, but thankfully there was something which raised the spirits later in the week in terms of good cartoons. But first up, next up, Double Decker X-03, Detective Buzzcut and the Steamy Murder Mystery Case. I've only seen about 3/5 of this because I wasn't supposed to be on this podcast. And so
okay. I went off. It's another homage to that, whatever that mystery thing that was, I know it wasn't a coin thing, but it was, you know, when
Patrick Epic, like loads of people have done it.
Yeah. Is there a particular thing that has done that mystery at the bathhouse, at the hot springs thing, and then rather than assemble everybody in the drawing room, they assemble upon the edge of the cliff.
That's every one of them. That's all of them.
It must be a specific thing, though, yeah. Because
what was the first one that did it, though? Yeah. That's what I want to know.
Yeah,
no, you're probably right. There is some that... Cause it's everything else is parroting.
Last time we saw it was in Pop Team Epic, wasn't it? But I've seen it.
I feel like I've seen it more recently, but yeah, we definitely saw it there. it's a common enough
probably done it. Actually, like, weren't they on holiday in Conan? Did they do it there as well?
Yeah, they've done it in Conan.
The one I watched, yeah. Wait, did they reveal the mystery on a cliff? I feel like they... Oh, no, wait. It was on, like, the veranda that's over a cliff. Yes. Fuck, they did it too. Shit. All right.
They did it in Azazel, but I can't remember if they did it on a cliff. But the Azazel one had a character who was supposed to be Conan, and the character who was supposed to be Kindaichi in it as well.
Okay.
But he only assembled there because Kay, who was like sort of doing all the organizing for like the office like retreat weekend, holiday weekend, it's just like, well, this is not on the itinerary, so we've got to follow the itinerary. I was supposed to like go to the cliff at sunrise so we can appreciate the lovely day, lovely dawn.
Well, that was like a big character moment for Pink where she finally goes like, come on, guys, we got to go to the cliffs now. And she pulls up the thing and Kay's like, oh my God, you're reading the schedule. You know, it's like, ah, they're working together as partners. That's great.
But basically,
there's good moments at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, but the start of the episode is basically everybody's bad traits turned up a notch. And then you kind of realize that Boxer and Robot don't have any bad traits. They seem to be.
No, they're like decent human beings, including the robot. Yeah,
everybody else, absolutely scum.
It's just that Max might get a little bit emotional when you got a bit of drink on her, but that's it.
Whereas Flamin Dina is absolutely rat-assed even before they've got there.
Doug is red arse the whole time as well. Like, he reveals that he's been, like, I thought he was nodding off on the bus, but it's like, oh no, I've been fucked since six this morning, man.
Like, Carol, don't tell anybody. It doesn't show outwardly, but I'm totally, totally blasted right now.
He's
not on the job, so it's okay, I guess.
This episode is chronologically after the last episode, isn't it? Because they,
Derek's got a new home. Derek's new bus.
New bus, yes.
And finally tell him, Valerie or Mila actually Kimbrough's brother. It's like, what? And going through that whole thing where, someone's got to tell him, but, you know, it's like, inopportune time to try and break it to him. But happily, kind of towards the end, I get the impression that Derek is like, well, it's grand, like, you know, I still want to, like, work in a restaurant and stuff, but, you know, possibly more, because that might not matter to me.
Yeah, I think he literally says something like, I don't care about someone's gender, I just care if they're nice, and, you know, getting all, like, blushy and everything, and I'm just like, okay, that's the best possible way you could have handled this show. Well done. Well fucking done.
Yeah. It is doing a lot of, we gotta go to the hot springs, and you gotta do a lot of tropes. But it is kind of following more modern trends, where Travis is just like, hey guys, let's go for a peek in the baths, but he gets shut down almost immediately.
Hey, let's go into the mixed baths. Hey, I'm going to fucking order some geishas. Fucking, who's going to stop me?
He's been
such an uber creep. It's fucking great.
I find it's been like a really like welcome trend I've noticed. In my Hero Academia, they were saying now that they'll do that. And I've been reading up in Black Clover recently. Same thing. Yeah. Guys, let's not do that. It's really creepy.
Yeah.
No, the Black Clover does have its cake and eat it by showing you all the female characters naked in the comic before you get to that scene.
That's fair enough, yeah. I mean, like, this one in the end bit, it does show you the women in the bath, and they do some stereotypically women things. I think Kay might be a bit gay.
I was going to ask you, did this episode end with everybody, in the same way the Kieran Gillen Young Avengers did, with everybody realizing they're bisexual?
Pretty sure everyone in this show is gay, in some regard, yeah.
Because you've also got Apple, like, perving over Doug's physique earlier on in the episode.
Oh my god, he's muscles. Can I touch him? And Doug's just plastered. Go for it, kid.
And Travis at the end when they're in the bath.
Even Travis gets a gay moment and he's trying very hard to not appear gay.
Like, they have Carol and they have Valerie in there and he's like, you know, if you squint your eyes just right,
he's kind of like blocking
off.
It's
almost like being a woman's bath.
Yeah, he's like, well, this is good enough. If you don't have a hot lady, hot dudes will do. Am I right, guys? Am I right? And they're all like, shut the fuck up, dude. You're a weird creepo. Nobody likes you. And even Apple's like, Jesus, Doug, how can you work for that guy? And he's like, that's just fucking working, isn't it? You always work for some creepo. It's good. There's loads of good character fun moments in this. And it even handles the, oh, should we tell him that girl's actually a guy? It handles that as well as you can do that joke, which isn't great, but still handles it pretty well.
It's not always been the most delicate with it, but I think it's just doing like a far better job than a good 98% of similar material in anime's history.
Like, for how poorly it's doing a bunch of it, it's at least fucking trying in a bunch of regards. I gotta give it points for effort, yeah.
And of course, since we last talked about Double Decker, they've announced that Tiger and Bunny's coming back, haven't they? So,
man, if they can keep up the same kind of thing that the improvements that Double Decker's added, then I'm kind of all for that. Yeah.
Biggest revelation for me in this whole episode, seeing Max without her makeup.
Oh, I was like, who the hell is that pink-haired woman for a second?
Yeah, same with Dina too. Like, what's wrong?
Yeah. More so with Dina. Yeah. But It was very odd. I was like, oh, because they're going to the baths. Like, why would they be wearing makeup and shit? It was really fun. It was good. It was a good, like, fun episode. And all the characters playing at the thing were like Doug's kind of, Doug's thing of like, where they're all just, he's playing into the tropes because he knows it and that kind of thing, but he's still being his massive dickhead self. Like, he goes, I've solved the mystery, the murderer. And he's, and, you know, his partner is like, I'm not dead. I was only unconscious.
I just fell over.
I'm fine. I'm actually here. I drove you here in the bus. It's like, the murderer was Kirill, and also me. And it's like, no, it totally was Doug. He's blaming Kirill for it as well, which is just such a dick Doug move. It's good.
Oh, yeah. And Kirill's landlady.
That's right.
Her twin sister is one of everyone's the bathhouse resort.
Oh, yeah. I also forgot there's the quickly rushed over explanation of why there'd be a Japanese-style bathhouse in this fictional country.
I forgot it wasn't fictional Japan for a bit. It's like, hey, it's Asian style. And I'm like, oh, right. Yeah, sorry. I forgot that. But yeah, it's a pretty fun excuse for it. I also like the fact that Kay became friends with the landlord, like off screen since the finale.
Well, they went through a very dangerous situation together, so we kind of hit it off.
They have lunch once a week. They're good pals.
Yeah. Also, the landlady has got blackmail on Kirill. Even though it doesn't really matter because it was just like, oh, it's a picture of Kirill wearing like, when he was in high school, wearing like a bunny girl costume. It's like, well, but we know he's well into that, well into like, doing drag now, so it doesn't matter.
But actually, I thought that wasn't like an important thing because it's himself and his brother there. It's like, hey, brother, why do you dress as a woman? It's like, well, initially it was a disguise, but you know, I also think I'm kind of hot, so feels nice.
And
Kirill's like, yeah, me too.
Yeah. Also,
and
Sophie.
Like, what? And it's like a brother bonding moment about like cross dressing. And it's the Kirill, like, you know, going like, I don't just cross dress for work, I cross dress for fun sometimes as well. And it's like, oh, that's nice. It's good to see them have that in common.
And Sophie got a much better holiday than the rest of them on her own on Travis's.
That was fucking great because I was kind of like, what's the deal with this character? But she's been fantastic. I love the fact that she wears black when she's off work because she's sick of wearing all the colors all the time. Good stuff.
Rightio. Next up is Karakuri Circus, episode 26, at Mont Saint Michael.
Mont Saint Michel.
That's it as well. Yeah, there's no A in there. Yeah. So this is where the comic, the anime, has to do a whole lot of chopping and changing from what happens.
We gotta
establish
the relationship between these characters really fucking quick, guys.
Yeah, the only place it stumbles is, and it's not really a stumble. It's just unfortunate. It just has to like establish 5 volumes worth of relationships in one conversation.
Mm.
But Lise and Masaru are following the blimp where it goes. Meanwhile, on the blimp, I think before we get to them, we get the bit where Eleonore is being shown round by to meet the new automatons. They're being shown round by the Harlequin. One of the original ones, yeah.
Yeah.
And these new ones are a bunch of dipshits. Just, there's like one guy who thinks he's a human. One guy who's obsessed with martial arts.
But he's not really doing anything. He's just sitting there reading about it.
Yes.
It's less impressive. My favorite was the guy standing in the room. He's like, I just stand in this room until the boss wants me.
Yes. He's like supposed to be like, he considers himself Faceless's jester. So he only exists to make Faceless laugh. So if he doesn't need it to be made laugh, he just stands in a weird pose and then like one bathes in the blood of humans. And Eleanor is not impressed and then tells off, Harlequin about, he's like, what's your purpose? It's to bring you joy. And she kind of like, basically just tells him to go off and get some empathy. Pretty much is what the conversation. And so he wanders off to think about that, which comes into importance later on when he runs into Lise, as Lise is fleeing from Dr. Lau again, and he's got even more chimeras now. This is when they get there and they get split up. Masaru runs into, Columbine.
Like straight away into her.
Yes,
yeah.
Because they've got to establish the relationship they didn't have. run afoul of some, is it just one new Shirigano in the anime?
There's a bunch of
guys.
There's a guy with sharp teeth, but I don't think there's only one with a name.
Yeah. There's like one whose arms turns into blades, and there's the guy who's got drills for teeth.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Liz runs into Harlequin, who saves her from whichever beast it is. Is it like the weird cat thing that was chasing her?
It was the cat one, because I remember it having like a round Cheshire head despite just being shaped like a cat for the most part.
Which makes her smile, and then he's like, Well, because this is the thing, yeah. Because
you can make people smile by not murdering them and saving them? Yes. The fuck? No one told me that.
Yeah. Also, because the other thing you got to think about is their job was to make Francine smile, and they never achieved it.
Yeah. So it's like, wait, you can make people smile by fucking being nice to them? I don't understand. No, explain this to me. They're very bad puppets. I think all these puppets suck.
Well, yeah, I mean, the only thing we get is from the conversation is from Columbine is that at one point she'd run into a library and started reading books, and she'd fell in love with like
the idea of
novels.
Love.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so she's in love with the idea of love, and
she wanted a boy to hold her or hold her hand, she wants all these things, even though she doesn't understand the significance of them.
Yeah.
So when Masaru inadvertently kind of protects her from, or like pushes her away from the Shirogane, she's like, oh, a boy fucking held me. That's part of what I want. Okay.
Yeah. But I think it's trying to say something with like, oh, the male puppets actually have to be pushed into this, and the one female puppet has somehow discovered it herself.
Yeah. Yeah. Off screen. Yeah. I guess. Mm.
And they managed to get away from the Shirogane by falling down a bottomless pit, which turned out did have a bottom. And that's got all the bodies of the Shirogane, which are operating the puppet bodies.
So are all the new puppets, maybe they don't have human brains, but they're downloaded into the robots.
Yeah. Mm. It's like, we got to the bottom. Oh, it's the Matrix. What's going on here? And Lise is still running away, because she's yet to have a big moment.
When she went to the start of the episode, don't worry, Master, I'll take care of this ringmaster. This is my fight to win. And it's just like she spends the entire episode running the fuck away.
Well, that's because she has to fill the roles of two characters.
The character who ran away and herself.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Because in the comic, Masaru's come on his own. And Lise has followed with two characters who do not exist in the comic. And she's already...
So she can't, yeah.
Yeah, no, she, at this point in the comic, she's already tamed one of those beasts. Which I guess, I think that will be an improvement, is because you get the weird situation of having that scene again later on, where she tames some more of those beasts. And it's kind of like, well, didn't we just see that a few volumes ago?
Would it not take it like in a different context that if she did it in a different situation, though?
No, it plays out pretty much exactly the same.
Okay. Mm.
It's like, I think there's some of the panels where it's actually in English, so I can see what she's saying each time.
If it's better, that makes sense in terms of better pacing, but it really makes her kind of look crap in this episode.
It does, yes, because she's got to fulfill the role of, I don't know the exact details, because this hasn't been translated into English, but it's supposed to be, it's supposed to be, the actual love interest for Masaru.
Wait, so none of these other love interests are love interests?
No.
Okay.
I think the real one does not exist. There's also another puppeteer who's not here at all.
Of course. Oh, God damn.
But I mean, they do a pretty good job. Yeah, so you say the one disadvantage is Lise has to just spend the entire episode running away.
It's like we don't really have much growth or development or whatever of her character so far, so it's really not great that this is the most we've gotten, her just spending it running the fuck away.
Yes.
Because I thought like I thought the stuff with Masaru and Columbine worked pretty well. If it felt like rushed, sure, it felt kind of packed into this episode alone rather than having any prior stuff, but it felt natural enough, you know?
Yeah. And my favorite stuff was the stuff with Eleonore at the start, and those, like, these puppets, you just want to see them. The great thing is you want to see them get beaten in by the old puppets, because they're just being absolute dicks to them.
Yeah. I gotta say as well, like, at least if Eleonore is not gonna get to do any sweet fucking puppet fighting anymore, then at least she gets to call everyone motherfuckers around her.
Yes.
Not really much of a trade-off, but, you know, fuck it, you take what you get.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she doesn't really get to do much of that in the comic either, so that's not...
yeah.
It's not really anything of the anime's fault there. Like I said, like I've said before, I feel like he fell in love with the idea of, like, following the wills of those three people from his flashback, and that kind of ate the rest of
the
comic.
He enjoyed that story, and that became what the main story was about. Mm.
But that's Karakuri Circus for another week. Then we've got Wacky TV Na Na Na, episode 1. I can't remember what it was called. Let me have a quick
Wacky
look.
TV Bought Out.
That's it. This is a new short. We'll take what shorts we can get, as Bono Bono has still gone missing.
The fuck?
This is season 2 of Wacky TV Na Na Na.
Jeez, we're joining the story as in progress, I guess.
It appears to be just a whole bunch of TV Tokyo in-jokes, but not really impenetrable. It's because the actual story, the plot of this, is that Wacky TV Na 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 has been bought out by Nanazon Prime, and they've sent their executive, who is basically a cross between Donald Trump and Jeff Bezos.
I wasn't expecting to like that character as much as I did, but I did like the random shout out. He's like, "Hey, listen to me. Fuck you.
Hey, you. Shut up."
Yeah. It was pretty funny, like, thing of the loud, angry foreigner, I suppose.
Yes.
Strangling people.
At one point, was he attacking a mascot? I'm not entirely sure if that was an actual character or not.
It's hard to tell because they're all bananas.
Yeah. If I'd seen season 1, I'd probably know.
No, it is the TV Tokyo mascot that he's attacking.
Okay.
The one who bends over into like a 7 shape.
Okay.
Yeah, so the expedition production crew feel like they're at risk because they had like a massive spike, but now they
discovered an interesting looking animal, and everyone was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And then everyone tuned out because they've done nothing since.
And they're trying to get one of their crew to sacrifice themselves. For the rest of the group.
I did like the thing of, like, why do I got to sacrifice myself? You look like you'd sacrifice yourself.
And so, but then they decide they climb inside the ventilation of the building, and that's where the cliffhanger lies. It's like...
They can't be fired if they can't be found?
I think that's the approach they're taking, yes.
Right.
I should say this is all done in, like, I don't know if it's actually paper cutouts or... A faux
definitely that
cutouts.
Kind of style. Yes.
Yeah, I really like it. I really like the designs of the expedition crew as well. Like the one banana, the one in charge who's got stubble all over his... Lots of them have got stubble, but the one with the stubble and the bad skin and the mustache.
I thought they all have nasty skin. I thought it was like the Donald Trump banana with the spot in his face, but then they all kind of have spots. It's just kind
of
gross.
Well, they have taken out the pattern of a different banana and the various kind of bruisings and pockmarks in it.
Yeah.
It
was a pleasant surprise, this thing, because it's only 3 minutes, so cracks a lot.
I mean, like, it's no Bono Bono, but I did enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah,
it's dumb and topical.
Then we've got, well, did anyone watch? No, we have on Friday, so Thursday is Sarah Zanmai, episode 1, I Want to Be Connected, But I Want to Lie. The new Ikuhara anime.
Brilliant.
It is.
I have no idea what's going on.
Well, I mean, the bit.
You have some idea what's going on.
Yeah, you've got more idea what's going on than I would say the previous two Ikuhara. But if you ignore the start and the end, you've got a lot more ideas. The bit at the start and the end which makes you confused. And you're even more confused if you go and read the comic. But, okay. The gist of it is there's three schoolboys who get turned into Kappa by a Kappa prince, and they've got to go and... What are they supposed to get? I'm trying to remember exactly what it's called. Desires? It's
the Shirakodama gem, yes. Which is, as we learned in Gekiga no Kitaro, a golden gem or a ball that's up your butt, and Kappas can rip it out of you. But in this case, that gem seems to... send in or signify someone's hidden or latent desire that they are trying to keep hidden, maybe for good or for ill, or maybe there's something that needs to be let out, or something that needs to be expressed or shared with the world.
And they're going to get these out of Kappa zombies.
Yes.
which are like people who can't, who've passed on but can't leave their desires behind.
Something like that,
Maybe something to do with the cops at the end.
It's another one of these things where there is a hidden zone, similar to Tenna, similar to Yurikuma Arashi, that there is like a kind of hidden zone where all of these strange rituals or these like allegorical conflicts are fought out. And so there's kind of a hidden zone where the Kappas can just go about and do their own little thing. Like, notably, like, both there and even in the real world, you know, aside from actual main characters, the rest of the population of the town are just like very basic, like, figures. Like, I would see on the, say, on the sign from our bathroom, you know, to note, like, male or female, just kind of floating by, just not really kind of interacting with anything else.
Did you do that in the bear one? Because you did it in Penguin Drum as well.
Probably in Yurikuma Arashi as well, but it isn't a detail I do. Yeah. That sticks out most of my mind, you know.
No, I've only seen the first episode of Yurikuma because it didn't click with me the same way Penguin Drum did, and neither of them clicked with me the way this first episode did. This was my favourite of the first episodes of those three things.
Hmm. Did you see Utena at all, or has it been too long?
I haven't seen all of Utena. I've seen some of it, but it has been a long time. Yes.
Yeah, I finished that relatively recently. But recently, I mean, like 2 or something years ago, and that's weirdly the most recent one of the Ukara thing that I've actually watched to completion. I had like a bit of good headway in Yurikuma Arashi, but I lost it. One of it was for, I don't know why, something came along, or it was harder to get. I think of it, it's just like it was on something that I could use on Deuster or Funimation or whatever, then it was gone again, so it was kind of eluded me for a little while.
Yeah, and there's box metaphors in Penguin Drum, but they kind of pretty much spell out the boxes out in this, and they're the same thing. Also, it seems like after they've retrieved the ball, then they get part of their reward is one of them gets to blurt out their secrets in front of the other two.
Or it'll just be kind of like mind linked against their will, no matter what they do. And that's kind of the crux of it as well. It's like, yeah, I want to have this connection with somebody else. I want to like have this relationship with other people, but I'm scared or hesitant because I don't want to reveal, I don't feel safe revealing everything about myself. Maybe not just yet. I can understand, yeah. That's kind of the thing you kind of want to reveal over time. I feel like, it's kind of experimenting, like, what if we meet somebody for the first time? What if your deepest secret was, just shared amongst you just straight away, rather than just building a rapport and a friendship with somebody and then you feel comfortable in imparting it to them. But what if it was founded on you sharing that secret just straight up, even if it was something you didn't want revealed for whatever reason at all, and it was just kind of out there between you, and now you just kind of thrown that grenade into the room, and now you got to try and deal with it.
Yeah, because the three of them have got an interesting setup in that two of them are kind of responsible for the situation in the first place, but they have no connection except one happened to witness the other one try to break into a car. And then the third one is connected to the other one because they go to school together and one of them is dressing up as a woman and sending videos to the other one. And the other one is trying to convince the other guy to stay in the football team, but he doesn't want to. He's bought him a present. That's what's in his box. And so yeah, you can tell like there's obviously supposed to be, when you see the opening credits, it's like the two who know each other, there's obviously some, their secrets are related to each other. But then the third guy is not connected to them whatsoever as far as we can know. It's his imagery in the opening credits is this character we've not met yet, who's an adult as well.
Yeah.
But the other great thing about it is it looks fucking excellent and it's gross.
It does look great.
And the way they transform into Kappas is they get swallowed by the Kappa and he shits them out.
Yes. Dwayne, you're awfully quiet. How do you feel about this?
Why did you make me watch a guy get shit out? Why did you do this to me? That's in my fucking brain now. I can't get rid of that.
It wasn't like
a horrifying image.
It was just rectal juice. It's different.
Oh, what about when those two guys shoved that other guy up that monster's butt and there was all that juice coming out and squirting all over him? I had to look at that with my eyes. That's in there now.
It's great.
Like, I can't deny it was fucking animated well. That's part of the problem, I think.
Yeah. The other thing I like is the fact that they're only in this because they said the Kappa looked like a frog, and that just sets him off and turns you into a Kappa if you do that to him.
Yeah, when the third guy like showed up, like unbeknownst to him, is like, oh yeah, your friend can't see us, watch it. I slapped a sticker on his face. It's like, oh shit, a talking frog. And he's like, you son of a bitch. He wasn't involved up to that point until the guy fucking slapped a sticker on his face. Dear.
And then you got the two cops who, I don't know what their involvement is. Are they the people?
So those are the main characters of the other thing.
They're the main characters of the comic, yes. They find a baby on a plate.
I have no idea what the fuck's happening with them in this. Yeah.
They find a baby on a plate and they take it home and they look after it. And in the last chapter, the baby grows up to be, like overnight, grows up to be the fortune teller who we see in the video in town.
Oh.
But then they wake up and it was just a dream.
Okay. Seem to be doing something similar to what the Kappas are doing, but it's different. It seems a lot more threatening and hostile anyway, or aggressive at least.
Yeah, and they've got the otter imagery that we see when they go into the whatever dimension it is to attack the Kappa zombies. And I was like, because I thought it was going to be sickle weasels, but then we see like their booth. And above it is like this massive otter poster. And then I looked online and I was like, oh, okay, that's how otters and kappas are related. Kappas are otters. They were what people thought an otter balancing a stone on its head. What could that be? Oh, it's probably some sort of river sprite.
It's probably a turtle that has a bowl on its head. I'm not going to investigate into this.
Loves cucumbers. Maybe they... I don't know whether the river otters... We don't know because they're extinct in Japan. I don't know whether that'll play into some part of it as well.
Our little Kappa guys are pretty cute, though. And they got a sort of... they have sort of half of a kind of a Sentai team thing going on, like with the scarves and a team of type moves. But also, I can't help but thinking what the different color scarves are. This is like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, they do look like turtles. Yeah, that's fair.
I like the bit when they're in the human forms and just after they've first met the Kappa and they've had their minds wiped, but they're just constantly eating cucumbers. Yeah, this was my favorite thing, I think, this week. Looking forward to more.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's good, but it is pretty dense stuff as an Ikehara show will be. So it is something. No second screening. Sit down and watch it properly, like an adult.
It is a different co-writer this time, though, to the last two. So that may have something to do with it feeling a little bit more accessible.
Just maybe as time goes on, because. He probably is aware that probably will be greater like reach for this thing via stream service and stuff like that. Now maybe try and grasp as much of an audience as possible. You know, don't try and like load it up too much, because it is still like loaded up with one like imagery and symbolism and stuff like that. That people who are more versed in it than I would be better able to figure out. And I look forward to reading all about it after all is said and done. But yeah, like I feel like I'm not missing out on a massive amount, just so much you can see in front of you, and there's probably loads and loads you can kind of be expounded upon again based on those same similar things. But that's just kind of what's fun about reading into it after the fact and then going, oh yes, now I do.
Yeah, the music's great as well. I should forgot to mention that. I think it's like all variations on the theme tune. I heard someone mentioned.
Oh yeah, they do break into a song in the big fight. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I was looking at what the co-writer has written previously. Okay, right. Nothing we've watched. So
it's probably another one of Akihara's theatre buddies. Perhaps.
Well, he's done a bunch of anime stuff. He's in production advancement on Natsumi's book, production, a lot of production stuff and a few scripts. like a bunch of scripts for Endride, I think is the thing they've, and yeah, that seems to be the thing they've done the most scripts for.
Okay.
Okay, next up is, did anyone watch Fruits Basket, episode 2?
I did, yeah.
You're all animals.
You're all animals!
Animals.
I did like the way that was basically like the first joke in the thing where there's another fucking Amazon guy, what the hell? And delivering a parcel, and she's like, they're all animals. She's like, yes, random lady, they certainly are all animals. Could you sign for this? And the dog signs for the package. He's like, what a clever dog.
What's going on that Kyo as a cat can emote and be a cartoon cat perfectly fine? Shigure as a dog is just like, he's talking, but his mouth's not moving. He's not doing anything. It's like, that's, blah.
Like a picture a dog, like, opening and closing its mouth with all them sharp teeth and everything. It wouldn't be cute.
I've watched fucking Ginga Nagaraboshi again. It was perfectly fine in there.
I feel like it'd be a worse version of Mr. Ed or something, no?
Well, but you got a cartoon cat that's going off like right next to him. It fits in, that's fine. Why is the dog going to be different? I don't. Like, cats are fine. I just like dogs a little bit more. So I kind of want to see them get their fair shake as well.
Fair shake. I get it.
But anyways, I was kind of dealing with what the fallout of before. It was like, oh, she's in the secret. Shit. Historically, when anybody outside the family stumbled upon the family secrets, they would get their memories erased by some kind of hypnosis. It's happened before in the past when there were Yuki was on the playground, and then a girl got too close, and then the whole playground saw him turn into a rat. And it's like, oh, crap. And they brought in all those kids and they just hypnotized them. Which is so far, this family is willing to go to, and I guess the power they have as well to do those kind of things.
So they explain like the roughness to her, but obviously the a rat boy is kind of scared that she's going to get her memory wiped, and he's got a lot of I guess you call it like trauma over that. Whereas the dog guy's like, I'm going to have to talk to the boss about this, see if we have to wipe her memory or anything without having to explain it to her, because I guess you could explain it to her and what the fuck can she do about it, but it keeps everyone a bit calmer if you don't say it, I guess.
Yeah. But they're happy to let Toru like, live in their living house with them as well. She manages to excavate this toxic waste dump of a kitchen and get it all cleared out. And then also for simplicity's sake, just to help kind of guess even out the whole living situation, they're going to have Kyo transfer to the same school as Yuki and Toru go to as well. And he's, doesn't adapt that well, isn't dressed that well initially, because he's like, fucking girls everywhere. If anyone, like, bursts off me, I'm going to turn into a cat, and we're all fucked. Like, why are you here? And he's a bit more, like, short-tempered and like...
He's a wild cat.
Yes. Like, a girl, like, comes close to me, phone puts her into an armbar.
I mean, like, it stops her hugging him. You can't deny that. I mean, like, then leaping out of a, what was it, like, fourth story window, landing on his feet, and everyone's like, that was pretty crazy right there.
Yeah. Just, Yuki's a bit more, like, well versed in it, and just, kind of elegantly just sort of pirouette away. our prince is so graceful on his feet. But Toru is there actually kind of in her own sort of thick headed, but very well meaning and super sweet and empathetic manner kind of helps him see through like all of these anxieties, all these kind of fears that they're having right now, and it says, well, my memory might get erased, you know, I understand that, but if it does, and just makes this promise that we'll be friends again when you go to school, I want like make friends with me again. And she's like, oh, fucking this.
Yeah, introduce yourself to me again. Like, we're, she's like, not only like, he's surprised, like, you didn't tell the secret and we're gonna fucking wipe your memory, and that sucks. So he's impressed that she managed to keep it in, but also that she's just cool with her memory being wiped, because it's like, well, it's for your own protection. I understand totally. She's fairly sound out.
Yeah. And her patient manner is getting through to Kyo as well. Like, he kind of goes off in a huff into the woods, and then he goes after him, and he's like, oh, she's saying the whole thing about, you know, in that whole Zodiac story, I always felt sorry for the cat, and I always wanted to, like, meet up with the cat, and now I do, and, you know, I want to get along with you, and he's like, yeah, I know, it's like, this shit, I'm fucking sorry, and it's like, this is all fucking new to me, and I've been kind of put down on my life, and this fucking,
So just to receive a kind of like a someone who actually likes the idea of what he represents and stuff. But also, she was walking home from her job, and he went to the forest to protect her from perverts.
Yeah.
Which he was then mistaken for one, which I thought was a good bit.
Yeah. It's just like, it's just like, you know, he's like saying, I know I'm a fucking guy who's just really short-tempered and doesn't know how to interact with all people normally and socially, but I'm new to it, so I'm still trying to figure it out. So I'm sorry I'm so nervous, but it's just the way I am right now. It's a pretty place for me. It is like, you know, similarly like Bakugo, the kind of the angry guy who's always shouting and stuff, but he has this layer of depth to him as well. There's actually a reason why he's this angry, shouty guy.
Yeah, like she, again, her stupid intuitiveness, she kind of realizes that he is a person who cares deeply because he's getting very frustrated that he can't apologize to her, that kind of thing.
Mm.
He recognizes that he's hurt her physically and maybe hurt her feelings, and he's trying to do better, but he's just not good at it. So it's like, oh, okay, you're sensitive on the inside. I got you.
Yeah.
Just that kind of intuitiveness is winning her over to a lot of people, obviously.
Yeah, like, the Zodiac story, you know, it lines up pretty much as well with how the family members interact and will interact in the future. So, like, you think, like, the cat sisters also looked down upon, and, you know, there's probably been, from looking at things, like, you know, probably, like, horribly emotionally abused all of his life, like, and it's no one that he has the kind of personality and immunity he does. And, you know, it's a good portion of the series is going to be about, you know, him trying to kind of come to terms with that, you know, and kind of Toru being this healing influence, which could be to your taste or not. It can be a little corny, a little schmaltzy, but I think it is fairly wholesome and nice stuff overall, all the same. But yeah, and besides, it's kind of it's a good kind of fun adaptation. It is getting a good bit of kind of the comedy across as well. Toru's two mates, Uo and Hana, the goth and the lingua of the school, are still like,
oh yeah, yeah,
or star players when it comes to that end. And they get drawn into it more, especially when they sort of form a sort of friendship group at school with like Yuki and Kyo, and then various other cousins and siblings and other members of the Soma family get introduced. You know, yet more and more exotic transfer students coming and like, being brought into the fold as this thing will go on.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm having fun with it again. So
Still not gone to that whole puffy smoke thing.
There
was some weird off model faces and arms in this, which was kind of throwing me. But other than that, it was fairly nice.
Yeah, that effect is definitely probably the biggest shock coming of the whole thing. I don't know why I decided on that.
And it's going to happen a bunch.
It's going to happen so many times, multiple ones in the same scene even.
Maybe they realize the amount of times puffy smoke is going to play into the plot, and they're just like, we needed just that cheap way of doing that.
Anyways.
Righty-ho. What we got next is Bungo Stray Dogs, Season 3, Episode 26, Dazai Chuya, 15 years old. Couldn't even begin to tell you what happened in this episode, and I watched it.
It's very straightforward. You just kind of know where to cut through to the actual kernel of truth and purpose being underneath it all. Because this is adapting a light novel, and it is sort of heaped through with a lot of dialogue that thinks it's sounding very deep and complex and meaningful, but actually is trying to express, as often the case, a very simple idea or thought process in a most overly wrought, overly complicated way.
Yeah. Okay, so time me. I want to see if it takes me 20-something minutes to explain the plot of this. The old boss is alive again and possibly has to do with some weird black fire monster that set off an explosion where there's now a town. The new boss, who's the guy who killed the old boss, doesn't want the old boss saying, hey, I was totally fucking killed, so that his organization would tear itself apart. So he sent fucking suicidal Johnny and his not friend, Gravity Man, to solve the murder mystery. Solve the unmurder mystery? I guess unmurder mystery, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sends to the town first, and then to hear about this other faction, which is like basically stray one street urchins who are forming a gang, and they're led by Chuya with a gravity power. And
that's right.
He always has some kind of like link to this or involvement with it, or always trying to find out what the whole deal with it is.
He's trying to find the deal with whatever it was apparently like I assume Second World War prisoner that exploded, made a crater, and a town moved into the crater. And if this guy is going back, obviously that's bad for him because that's where him and all his orphan gang are based.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They presume it must be some kind of ability-based thing. Because the old boss, they bring up the video cameras surrounding like the vault of the Port Mafia's base, the most secure room in the whole Port Mafia organization. And the old boss disappears in the room saying, you know, I know what you've done and I'm going to tell everybody. Ooh. And so the theorize is probably something to do with, I've forgotten the name of the figure they're talking about, but like,
oh, yeah, they keep mentioning the name, and yeah, I keep forgetting it, yeah.
Some kind of messenger from the underworld, yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, just thinking, okay, you two guys, you two, like, young 15-year-olds, like gangsters, you don't like each other, but by God damn it, you're going to make for each other. You're going to go out there and solve this case before any of this gets out.
Like, the boss gives these reasons where it's like, what is it? It'll be easier for him to question people because he's not Port Mafia. I need you to keep an eye on him in case he tries to fuck us over. And the other reason, secret. I think you're cute together, basically. I don't know.
Pretty much, yeah. If I just was going to be kind of gas crack. It works, but it doesn't work. I thought it'd be a lot more fun with, like, you know, it got the mismatched, like, investigative duo who are going to be trying to get to the bottom of this case. But both of them are trying to pull in their own way. You don't know me. You don't know my life. Like, you can't be... both be that guy. You get has to be kind of some guy one who's opposite kind of thing. The guy carries them both on that same thing. Like where's the chemistry then? It doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, you can't the tough cop who doesn't play by the rules. You can't pair him off with the other tough cop who doesn't play by the rules. I mean, like maybe that's why they'll work really well together. When it's like, oh wait, we don't play by the rules. Let's both not play by the rules. Yeah, it could work. Maybe, but at the moment, you know, like you say, it's kind of like just. I suppose it's like two young guys. The repeated joke is, "You're just a kid." It's like you're a kid too, you know. Whatever. I'm guessing that's the excuse for them explaining, but yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, oh, it's not as wretched as
oh god
other,
no,
other other bits have been around. Like that's just some kind of cool action bits. At the start, certainly, when Chuya just walks onto a plane, like, you know, in midair, kicks the door, and then the guy puts a gun, shoots a bullet at him, and he just kicks it back, wiping the guy's eyes.
That is literally the only scene I can remember from the episode.
Yeah. There's an alright fight between himself and, what's the guy with the monocle? I've forgotten his goddamn name.
I've forgotten what his actual power was.
It's like
was,
a snake you know. Thing or something?
I think
that's all
it
I
was.
Can remember.
It's just like, I remember him and
he has
then,
to catch
like,
a Haltia. That's all I fucking know is based off this fight.
I remember him, he smoked, and then like his subordinates no, didn't have powers. They were this knife guy and gun guy.
That is correct, yes.
Sorry, knife
girl.
My mistake.
Yeah. Ryuro Hiratsu is the guy with the monocle.
What's his power?
Let me have a look what his power is. His ability is... falling camellia causes things that he touches to fly backwards with immense force.
Oh, because, yeah, your man flew backwards, but he was using his own gravity powers to do it. So, yeah. It looked like he got him, but he actually didn't get him in that fight. Okay, that makes sense.
Anyways, they got to get to the bottom of this case. A building blows up right in front of them, and then somebody sits behind them. I got a gun. Don't do good, you guys move, otherwise you're fully for the lead. I was like, huh, the plot thickens, huh? Whenever we get the bottom of this case, and hopefully two episodes or less, we can get back to the main plot.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I'm not watching any more of this till it's back to adapting the comic.
Oh, no, that's fine. I totally understand that. I'll check in just to make sure nothing interesting is happening. But other than that, I'll kind of pay passing interest for the most part.
I watched Dead Apple, the film there, like, not long ago, and... had a similar sort of approach, I suppose, where it is trying to do like, you know, oh, man, I'm dark and complex. I got powers, but my life is full of pain. Kind of a thing. And do the whole thing. We're going to focus on just a small kind of bit of the cast here. Like, you know, I think it will work better as an ensemble thing, especially as the whole thing is there's a, like, an ability user whose whole thing is he can collect, like, abilities and, kind of create their manifestations so that the users kind of fight against their own powers without their own powers. They get kind of cool little bits where, I've forgotten his name. Akutagawa, I would say, in the Port Mafia, you know, that he has the coat that can turn into a lion and turn into dragons and claws and stuff. Him going over, well, my coat can do this, but its weakness is this, so if they do this strategy to take it out. But, oh, that's a pretty cool idea. Now, if only they'd done that with the rest of the cast, not just this handful of guys you're just most interested in writing for. And there's like a lot of that in there. Some kind of surprising level of backstory relating to Atsushi, or Tiger Boy, and he's got some kind of hidden link to the main villain, and possibly then as well to Dostoevsky, who's also like introduced in this, and Dazai knows all about him. So I'm interested to know how it'll all dovetail in when it gets to introduce those guys in the main TV series here. Because as we know, we're going up against the Russian or the European authors in this coming season, when it gets back onto it.
I feel like this light novel adaptation is going to be it's going to be kind of like the last one where it was like, yeah, you could have just had them do that thing where they mentioned that guy in the show and just like, okay, I'm good, I'm caught up. Like these couple of episodes won't be necessary to watch. Like if they do relate to the main plot at all.
Yeah. Like, if you want to know where, like, how Dazai and Shuya met up in Grand, but I feel we had, like, the measure of that relationship pretty fairly well from their interactions in the actual main program too, so.
Yeah, and it's more interesting the fact that they used to be partners, but, like, their relationship now is more interesting based off what we know that their past was. We don't need to see what their past was. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, the problem is there's a lot of light novels.
A lot of night novels got to be filled. Yeah, sure.
Rightio. Did anyone watch Kimetsu no Yaiba?
I did, actually. Episode 2, trainer Sakanji Urokodaki, in which Tanjiro, Kari, Nezuko, they go and find trainer Sakanji Urokodaki. Rather, he finds them when they run afoul of another demon who's massacred a house full of people.
Okay, fair enough. Any more to add? Is that sums it up?
Well, if he has to do like, you know, what they call a test, the guy finds him. He passes the test, which involves him like running down a mountain in the fog, like trying to avoid traps using mostly sense of smell to avoid it. Also getting laced full of stones and pitfalls, and gets nailed by one of those like kind of swinging log traps, like right in the head, and he gets back up again. He's stupid, but he has a good nose and durability. It is, and obviously he's going to be like inducted then into like the Demon Slayer Corps, go out and fight demons. Which I think it's kind of a shame that it's going to turn into sort of a standard sort of, maybe not a standard, but a kind of a fairly, you know, typical Shonen Jump action series plot. Because the whole thing was the encounter with the demon in this thing. Sort of fighting, to try to fight it or defend themselves against it. And this demon's got like Tanjiro kind of pinned down, like the hatchet didn't do anything from, oh, he's going to be pinned down, he's going to bite me. And then Nezuko runs up behind him, she's got like demon strength too, and just kicks the guy's head off and just lands over and bounces against a tree. Like, holy shit, she kicked his head off. But then, the thing is dead, but then like the head starts talking to him. Then the bike gets up and starts chasing at him for Nezuko. And they're like, what the fuck is going on there? And while he's seeing that happening, the head grows arms and then jumps at him again and starts trying to strangle him. And it had this real Evil Dead quality to it.
Just also shots, dead kind of thing.
Also shots of like the camera rushing quickly through the trees with the music playing. And it's like, oh, okay. this is really kind of fun. However, it's going to go into Shonen Action series, like, kind of storyline not very long from now. I thought, oh, kind of wish it kept up this sort of momentum, this sort of atmosphere. It was like a really fun way to play this story where it's just like, yeah, demons are fucking weird. They just like do weird unearthly shit and it freaks you the fuck out.
Okay.
Yeah. It still looks very pretty. But more has come out about that, about UFO Table and how they might have misappropriated those funds. They misappropriated funds that were supposed to be earmarked for charity funds for the earthquake relief. Like, lads, come on.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty low.
That sounds worse than the Kitty Films situation. Okie doke. Then we've got, I think we're on to Sunday at this point, so it must be Pretty Cure. More Niall. Niall's doing the sterling work of watching more than anything of any of us.
It's his commute to work, I suppose. What's this one? Radiate. The power of the Southern Cross. So they're all feeling low. They just come back in the rocket. Bad guys beat them last week. It's like, oh, we're feeling shit. Like Hikaru especially, because she feels responsible for it. It's like, oh, just rushed in there, half cocked, thinking we were hot shit, got overconfident, we got our butts handed to us, and lost not one but two pens out of the bargain. And that's me, man. I just fun blundering. I'm just a big dumb idiot, and I shouldn't have done that. I left and let you all down. Also, the space feds are after us. We've got to hide in the observatory from Kaguya's dad, who was like totally on the case. Now the kindly old astronomer recovers from him, but he's pretty, he can kind of see something's going on here. Like, muddy footprints coming in. Who left those, I wonder? I thought this observatory was closed for the night. What's going on here? But sir, we got reports of aliens landing over here. We got to come over here. Okay. Okay, well, I got to go take care of this. But if you see anything in the aliens flying around, you tell me or tell me. I'm head of the space feds, you know. So they're not feeling pretty great. Ikara retreats to the planetarium to try and mull things over. And then the kindly astronomer was saying, well, you know, we went to see the Southern Cross and when I get closer and see it. But, you know, I think it suits you very well. You know, it wasn't a mistake that you went there. I can see why it is, because for centuries it's inspired, like poets and writers and also explorers, because it guided so many explorers, you know, who were navigating on ships from the Southern Hemisphere. And maybe it can navigate you as well and inspire your imagination. Anyways, back has turned up again. And they have, rather than use the dark pen to make a monster or somebody else, it's out. How about us three villains will combine a pot together, use a pen or something, make a kind of a super monster. So they do that and they kind of made this monster just kind of all three of their forms, but comes out looking kind of like a scary, muscular clown. It's like, it has like the Tengu laser kind of long nose and hair. It has like the Kappa guy's bald patch. Don't know where the second three comes into it, but you know, it's got her sass, I suppose. And it starts stomping around. The space feds are there. It's like, oh shit, what's going on here? And knocks them all out. Knocks Monica's dad over. He's not looking good. And the car was saying, oh, we gotta rush in there and get it. Gotta rush in there and save him, but, oh, what if we get found out, we're gonna be even more trouble with fun. It doesn't really matter, we gotta go in there, we gotta save him. It's our job as Precures of Fun to take him out. And they go in there, and they fight him, but it's not really coming off, because this thing is too strong for him. And long story short, they just like find the power of imagination and inspiration within themselves and kind of put together like the Southern Cross, combine our four powers and make like a big attack and blow the bad guys up. But it is like kind of a nice, that's kind of a kind of, it's what you might kind of expect to kind of happen, you know, when we just kind of believe in ourselves and so on and so forth, but the kind of way they express it is still quite sweet and nice and, I always kind of think, oh, what Pretty Cure is doing, what this version anyway, you know, it doesn't feel like it's anything like spectacular, outstanding or breaking the mold as such, but just in the moment of it, I get caught up in it and I think, yeah, this is why I enjoy this. This is why I come back every Sunday, because it is fun and it is nice and it does, kind of inspires a nice warm feelings in your heart. But also it does little turns like this where leaves you on a cliffhanger. It's like they revert back to normal form right in front of Monica's dad. And like, what's going on here? You guys got to better explain yourselves right now. It's like, oh shit. But before they can say any more, a mysterious figure appears behind them, holding a video camera. Who could this be? We'll find out next week. And apparently, it's some kind of crazy film director. I think they're going to try and pass off everything that was transpired into this episode was actually a film, and they got to go along with this guy to try and cover up this alien invasion.
Okay.
So I think we could make some much-needed comedy being brought back to proceedings again next week, which I've been thinking could give it a kind of shot in the air. It's kind of a good trying to throw a few swords with the villains winning occasionally, but I expected the kind of would walk it back fairly handily this week because it gets everything kind of restored back to the status quo nonetheless. Their awakening of the new power of the new special attack move has seemingly awakened the big boss at the far end of the universe. She's kind of me awakened from his slumber and will be emerging, I'd say, in a few episodes' time. So I kind of want to see what's more going on with that. And I say this as well now. The villains, too, I'm hoping they probably will develop this a little bit long more, but they don't seem on the outset like there's kind of cackling villains who are one-dimensional. They're doing what they're doing, they're kind of raiding planets and stuff, because they were either exiled from their own planets, or the planets were destroyed or taken over, or they were driven away in some manner, so they feel aggrieved against by the rest of the universe, and they're doing what they're doing because they want to try and claw back some of what they believe that they're owed. And so they're not just kind of completely without redemption, or they're not doing this kind of completely without merit. They actually have something that they're like trying to fight for themselves and their own ideals, even if they're going about it in like in a shitty way and trying to take over things, because you're just probably getting a cycle of violence, a cycle of hatred that got you to where you are right now. So, hopefully break through with the power of love or some shit like that. But, it's fun in the moment.
Then, I didn't get to see Rio Soga. I've not watched it yet, so I can't comment on it this week. But also on Sunday, there was Gegege no Kitaro, episode 51, Enma Dio's Secret Bargain. In which much of the episode is given over to that very thing, as we learn how and why Kitaro managed to get Nekomasume back from the dead, albeit
he's done a deal with the devil.
Pog form. yes, he's literally done a deal with the devil. He's basically said, well, so he's gone to hell, and there's like extra security, and they're about to attack him when Enma shows up and calls them off, and they have a bit of discussion, and he goes, well, if you want me to bring back your friend, he really got to do something really, really for me. And he's like, oh, I'm willing to do anything for you. But then he sort of goes, well, no, you've got a lot of security. Something, well, I think there's something a guy might be able to help you with. And turns out, yes, these four treasonous generals have somehow escaped hell. And so therefore, in return for bringing his friend back to life, will you please capture those four generals and return them to hell?
But if you don't capture them?
If you don't, you'll have to take their place.
The bomb on your chest will explode in 24 hours, Snake Plissken.
Well, thankfully, there doesn't seem to be like a hard deadline on exactly how quickly he's going to do this.
Let's bring him back whenever you can. Hopefully, episode's time, maybe. That'd be pretty good.
Well, it might even just be 13 based on how quickly they dealt with the first one.
But you see, that's the wrinkle of it, because Ray, or other kind of protagonists here, who Kishido user, who butted in last time, he's out for revenge against these dudes because one of them destroyed his village and all his people. A long lineage of monks who have been exercising and fighting and seeding like yokai and demons all this time. It's always drafted the forged animals, but won't be able to return their souls to the underworld because he defeats and absorbs sort of form into himself to be another power he can use. So Gator and the one out of one fight. This guy is going to get that soul back to return that soul to the underworld to fulfill his part of the bargain.
And I'm assuming that there's a third party who's behind both these.
Yeah, because he's blaming Yokai for the destruction of his village and his people and shit. But it's clear it's like, yeah, I think you've been fucking made do this, dude. You didn't realize he's a patsy.
Yeah, but it had to be a third party because to let the four generals out of that receipt in the first place.
Yeah, because even the generals is like, what village? I don't know, dude. I've been fucking locked up for 1,000 years. The fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, which coincides with the changing of the new era in the Japanese calendar.
He says like that weakens the jail cell of hell. Yeah, basically.
That's pretty much the episode. Also, Nekomasume finally gets to the hot baths with Hanako and gets to show up just in time to save Kitore's life.
You don't get to see any of her in the baths, you fucking pervs. Yeah. Don't be weird.
they beat him, but then, as you say, Rei shows up and absorbs Nue's power.
I did like his very childish thing of like, you know, Kitaro's like, hey, I need that guy. And he's like, ah, no, I defeated him. I get to do what I want. That's the rules. That's the rules.
When he whips out the bow, I was like, bloody hell, it is Bleach.
Wait and see if he gets a big sword. I mean, like, I the odds are very fucking high.
Oh, probably.
High, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, because this week, once in the bow, I was like, oh, yes, Bleach. And I was like, oh, of course, Chad from Bleach had the arms, didn't he? So,
it's got two covered. Yeah, sure.
It feels quite kind of Bleachy, which is the one thing I've got against it. But, there was all good stuff. Like the bit at the end with.
Well, Bleach is the villain. Like the show. That's true. As this character is the villain.
Kira's going, what the fuck, dude? Can just be doing that? That's how we operate this anime. Well, this is my anime now, Kitaro. You're old news.
The only way for him to be like a proper version of Bleach as a character, as a villain, would be for him to just go on for too long, that kind of way. Go on until everyone gets sick of him and Kitaro forgets about him. It's like, hey, what the hell, man?
Turns out Nue knows lots of thrushes, not just that one.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of creepy thrushes. Oh, dear.
But Nekomasume is back to full strength. She's putting Nozomi Otoko in wrestling holds and explaining that whatever that young version of me said, I don't remember any of it, so you better forget what she said as well. And then wanders outside, and clearly she does remember exactly what she was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Ratman
gets fucked up because he's part human. He gets eaten by those, the thrushes taking?
The thrushes, they absorb your life essence.
Life essence, yeah. So he's like a freaking husk of a man and just hanging out in Kid Rose thing. It's like, oh, Ratman looks pretty bad today, huh, guys?
There.
No one really cares. Poor guy.
I can't remember what the next episode preview suggested was good. It seemed like it was going to go off on a non-related to this storyline for an episode.
It did. And it's incredibly dark later on. Episode. It's like more of a comedy one.
Oh,
now,
it's like a girl living in some woods with some yokai.
I think she was raised by the yokai or something like that.
Yeah.
Some Mowgli job going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's still good. It's just, I'm still not entirely sure, but there's other things I'm not entirely sure about either this week, which aren't anime related. They're comic related. This is Farley, far, far at the bottom of that pile. Righto. I think that's everything. Anything else we've missed? There's still so many cartoons. There's even more. As we've been recording, more have gone up on, well, are about to go up on Crunchyroll.
Oh boy.
That we previously did not have access to, such as Mix.
Okay.
Put Mix up on there now?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah. Well, I don't know then. well, we can try it, because you won't have a double decker next time, so I can.
That's true. Yes.
Screw that away.
I mean, I'm going to miss the fact that we don't have a double decker next time.
My feeling is I'm going to watch Dororo, Karakuri Circus.
Yeah.
Sarazanmai.
I'll try.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Kitaro. And then I should probably watch One Punch Man for the next episode.
Just to see, yeah.
And just to see. And then once Bungo Stray Dogs is back at the comic, I should probably
I'll probably
start watching One Punch Man. But that should do me. That's 3 hours worth of stuff, plus any shorts.
I mean, like, I still have time for Bono Bono if you want to get your shit in gear, Crunchyroll. Just saying.
Yeah, that's fine. Might see if I can trim back myself, because this didn't feel like difficult to get all in, but it does feel like a lot to just kind of spew out there, versus this podcast, which to a sense that I feel like some things are getting short shrift, mostly because I've watched them with, too far apart from recording time that I kind of forget key details and things about them and then kind of stumbled over them. Much like I did with Precure just then. So I may need this for the, just do due diligence to each of these kind of series to, maybe be more selective in it. Or try and watch them all in 1 4-hour chunk the day before so I remember them all. That might just compound my problems, but who knows.
That might just drive you crazy, so just watch out for that.
Righty-ho, anything else to add? Because I want to wrap this up because I'm about to climb into bed the way I'm tired.
Fair enough.
That we're fine.
No, I think we covered everything.
Righty-ho. We'll be like us.
We'll be back here next week for Metallica versus King Crimson or the other way around.
I thought it was Metallic. Oh, okay.
No, it's Metallica.
Like, that's the one that they probably get in the most trouble for, to be fair.
New metal.
No, I think King Crimson would be the one they get the most trouble for.
Really? I thought Metallica were very litigious.
I know, but King Crimson have, like,
notorious.
Can't get any... You've still got to buy all their catalogue physically.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. In the meantime, check out our regular podcast at secretofthesailormouse.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.